Coming up this afternoon, Central Time with Rob Ferret and Veronica Rickert. Stories from the day's news and stories of the unexpected. I'm Anne Strainchamps, and this is 45 North. And right now, Danny Ellis is a well-known Irish musician and now an author. A few years ago, he released a CD that took music critics by storm. It was called 800 Voices, My Life in an Irish Orphanage. And he's just published a memoir which takes us even deeper into his story. In the 1950s, when he was just a boy, Danny's mother left him at the gates of Ireland's notoriously brutal Artane Industrial School for orphaned and abandoned boys. It's a place run by the infamously abusive Christian Brothers. So, Danny, you begin your book with the story of the title track of your award-winning album, 800 Voices, which was a breakthrough song for you, not just professionally, but personally.
Absolutely.
What was going on in your life?
I'd been writing for years for other people. I never considered myself really a front man. I was always kind of a side man. I played trombone in many bands. I sang vocal harmonies in many bands. I was a singer in Abbey Road, a session singer in Abbey Road. But I never really considered myself a front man. I was always kind of shy and hung back in the back and wrote songs for other people.
And won a lot of awards.
That's right. And one night I came home from a gig. I was tired and a bit kind of fed up with my career. Just sitting by my piano, and musicians will tell you what they do is they sit alone and just play music, even though they're tired. Even though they've been working, playing music for 4 or 5 hours, they'll come home and play some more music to wind down. Mm-hmm. The hair of the dog. So there I was sitting by my keyboard and playing away, and I was just extemporizing, making up little melodies. And the next thing I knew was out comes a song about my wild youth in an Irish orphanage. It wasn't something I ever really wanted to visit. And when it did come out, it really opened up a whole new vein of creativity for me. And out came a whole album about my life in an Irish orphanage and the kind of things that really made me what I am.
And it wasn't just any orphanage. We're talking about the Artane Industrial School. This was one of the most notorious of the orphanages.
It was a tough place. There was 800 kids there. It was run by the Irish Christian Brothers, who really didn't have time for any niceties.
What do you call them? The hard men in black?
The hard men in black, yeah. The hitmen of the Catholic Church, we call them. Because they were the ones, it's like when you stepped out of line as a child in Ireland in the 50s, you might be told by your mother, if you don't behave yourself, we'll send you off to the Christian Brothers, or we'll send you off to Artane School. Everybody in Ireland knew about Artane School. And so we lived in fear of the Christian Brothers. And for me to find myself left there, it was a scary moment.
Is there a bit of 800 Voices you'd be willing to play for us?
Okay, what I want to do is I really want to play a song by, which is about a fella who sang in a choir, Tommy Bonner. Tommy was a champion boxer and a really hard, tough guy. But when he sang, he let all that toughness go and really gave all us orphans permission, really, to just really stop pretending to be tough and own up to what was going on. And so from the back of the church, you'd hear Tommy, and he would go, Kyrie, eleison, Kyrie, eleison. Early mass that first Black Sunday, I'm not praying very hard. Then he sings the most beautiful solo, Kyrie, rips my soul apart. And tears that I'd held back for days come pouring down like rain. It wasn't hard to let it all go when Tommy Bonner sang. Forbidden to look round us in church, today I have no choice. I have to see what kind of human being stood behind that angel voice. And in his eyes you saw the place where prayer first began. And you knew that God was listening when Tommy Bonner sang. Dark as any moonless night, clean as the morning dew. And he sang as if to save his life while saving my life too. And I never got to know him at all, but I knew him just the same. You see, 'cause everybody knows you when you sing like Tommy sang. Then one April Sunday morning, early in the spring, I thought he must be sick with the flu or something, 'cause he didn't come to sing. And when the mass was over, my heart fell to the floor to hear that Tommy turned 16 and left the school, and he'd sing at mass no more. At first I felt again abandoned, deserted and betrayed. It seemed that everything I loved would run and leave me here, lonely and afraid. But there and then a seed was planted, and God, I wish I'd felt back then just a small taste of the joy I'd come to find trying to sing like Tommy sang. Hey, 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 hey. Dark as any moonless night, clean as the morning dew. And he sang as if to save his life while saving my life too. And I never got to know that lad, but I knew him just the same. You see, 'cause everybody knows you. Everybody knows you. Everybody knows you when you sing like Tommy sang.
That is gorgeous. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you
so much.
A couple of frogs in here this
time of the day. Oh, it's early in the morning yet. Yeah. Oh, that's just beautiful. There's so much in that song. We could talk about it for half an hour. You know, how a place as brutal as an 800-bed orphanage could also give you some of the most beautiful moments in your life.
Absolutely. When you look back at your life and you take a good look, you see that right beside every bad thing that happened, there was something beautiful that happened. Because, I mean, life couldn't be all bad. It would just disappear down some black hole if it was, you know. So always in life, the way that I look at it is that there's always a saving grace. You know, you just have to keep your eye open for it. And music for me was the saving grace into your orphanage. I learned music, and music has carried me since. But Tommy was... really a shock to be sitting there in mass and to be feeling so lost and not knowing what the hell is going on, and to hear Tommy's voice coming from the back of the church as clear as a bell, and to just get filled with the hope of music, and just to get carried by that through the whole orphanage. Actually, music just took me and carried me.
What was daily life like at a place like Artane?
It was pretty tough. You know, you really had to toe the line. There was a million rules. There's a million places you couldn't go. You had to walk a certain way. you couldn't look at the brothers in a certain way. If you looked like you were even thinking something that was inappropriate, they would fall down on you like a ton of bricks. So the Christian Brothers were really hard, tough.
They beat you. I mean,
well, they did,
frequently.
But you know, that was par for the course in Ireland at the time. In the 50s, you know, corporal punishment was deemed to be good for the kids. So for the children to come unto me, you know, spare the rod and spoil the child, stuff like that. So that was par for the course, and it was encouraged by society, you know. But the parents would almost give the Christian Brothers, like, permission to sort the kids out, as it were, you know, make a man of them. Crippled generations of Irish children.
Yeah. Well, there was a huge investigation then, right, in the, I don't remember, 80s?
That's
90s?
Yeah, it was the 90s.
The state investigated, and suddenly, you know, Artane was all over the news and the internet and investigations. It was ugly.
Yeah, it was really. But what happened to me was I didn't know that, because the last thing in the world I would want to do was put Artane School into Google and start Googling it. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. And when the song came out, a few friends told me that there was all kinds of shenanigans happening in the Irish press. It was a lot about physical abuse, cruelty, neglect, and some sexual abuse. My whole story really wasn't about focusing on a diatribe of or an expose for the Christian Brothers. My whole story was to go back into my own past and make peace with my childhood self, who I detested. I detested my childhood self.
Why?
Well, because I felt he was a crybaby, you know? I didn't realize I had very good reason to be a crybaby. Being abandoned by your mother, it's going to make you cry. So I cried a lot in the beginning, and so I really worked hard at snapping out of that and, you know, joining in with the games on the playground, the shenanigans, the pickpocketing, the you know, the cheating and the lying and the maneuvering and the rebelliousness that went on.
Well, you had to do that to survive.
So you had to do that to survive. But when you do that, you bury a little part of you. And there was no counseling. Nobody was going to say, well, look, it's okay for you to feel bad about, you know, leaving your home. So when I did cry, I would snap out of it. And I had this alter ego, I called him Black Daniel, who would come and help me to snap out of it when I felt depressed. And, you know, I would gallop around the playground like a cowboy or pick somebody's pocket or cheat at cards, just anything to kind of like get yourself up out of the bad feeling of being lonely. And so that personality that I crafted based on music and on coping really didn't feel very good about my childhood self. And so the book, for me, was really wasn't about abuse, wasn't about a diatribe, wasn't about blaming anybody, the Catholic Church or the Christian Brothers. It was really about me going back across my past and finding that child. Because in the 800 Voices song, there's a line which goes, when it gets too much for feeling, you just bury it somehow. And that 8-year-old abandoned lad still waits for her right now. Well, the thoughts of an 8-year-old abandoned lad still inside me waiting for his mother just really cracked me up. It was something I'd never given any thought to. And I realized I really should take a good look at this.
Well, maybe you couldn't until you'd lived enough and gotten old enough to have the strength to go back and face all that pain. Because what happened was terrible. Your mother really did leave you at the gate of an orphanage.
Well, yeah, she really couldn't cope. She just didn't have any skills. I don't think her own mother was any model for her either. And poverty does that to people, you know.
You're so forgiving of your mother. I mean, did you ever see her again?
Never saw her again. No. You know, it was awful on me and awful on my family, but I don't think blame is a good thing to feel, you know, or resentment is a good thing to feel. It doesn't feel good.
Mm-hmm. The story that I found absolutely most heartbreaking. So what your mother did is she told you that she had TB and was going into hospital and that she'd come back. Mm-hmm. And she told you she'd come back for Christmas Day. What was that Christmas Day like? What do you remember about it?
That Christmas Day, I really thought she was coming Christmas Day. I mean, I think she must have just thrown it out. I'll be back for you at Christmas. But I really thought she was coming. And when she didn't come, you realize, a part of you realizes that you've been lied to and that you're alone. And a part of you doesn't want to face that. I mean, I went through a moment where I almost faced it. In the book, I talk about it when I was looking across the football field at a clock. And I went into a kind of a trance and I realized, man, you're on your own, you know, and nobody, there's nobody else. It's just you and God, if you wish. And so I entered that space for a little while and then snapped out of it. No, I'm not on my own. I have a mother and she's coming to get me. She's not well. She's sick. She has TB. And so I lived with that lie for a long, long time.
How old were you?
At the time, I was 8.
Little boy.
But I stayed in Artain for 8 years. So I think everybody has things in their life. I think what people find when they read the book is that even though they maybe were not abandoned by their parents, everybody in some way or another feels abandoned. And abandonment seems to be this kind of archetypal human condition that we just feel. We just feel like abandoned, you know. Everybody has to deal with that in some way, even people amongst families of like 5, 6, 7 people. And you just have to find your own way through your past and your feelings and just realize that you are whole and find that wholeness.
Danny Ellis is a well-known Irish musician and now an author. And we're talking about his award-winning CD, 800 Voices, My Life in an Irish Orphanage. He's just published a memoir of those years called The Boy at the Gate. For more information, check our Facebook page. It's 45 North on WPR. I'm Anne Strangehamps. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll hear some more music when we come back. Coming up at 11, Garden Talk with Larry Mueller. I'm Anne Strangehamps, and right now we're talking with Irish musician Danny Ellis, who has a CD and memoir about growing up in a notorious Irish orphanage. And Danny, one of the things I admire about the way you wrote the story in this book is that you were really careful both to let us see the grief and the hardship, but not to drown us in it. As readers, there's so many stories that are also just stories of children and hijinks and, you know, epic snowball fights and mischief you got up to. So you can see the kind of closeness that developed between you and some of the other boys.
Well, that's what happens. There's an ironic freedom being in an orphanage with 800 kids because they can't look at you like your parent. They can't monitor you like your parents can monitor you. So you can get up to all kinds of wonderful mischief for years that nobody ever knows about. And that kind of fills you with confidence and fills you with something other than being abandoned. Mm.
Did you ever find any of the old, after years later, did you ever hook up with any of the people you knew when you were at Artain?
Well, the Tommy Bonner song that I sang, I put it on my website. About a year and a half later, I get an email saying, my name is Kevin Bonner, and I think you're singing about my father. He said, I was sitting by my computer tonight thinking about my father. I knew he was in an orphanage. He never told us too much about it, and I haven't spoken to him in a couple of years. He said, we had a falling out, and I'm just wondering about him, and I decided to Google him and put the word orphanage in there, and he said, in minutes, I had downloaded your song, Tommy Bonner, and I was listening to you sing about my father 40 years ago.
Wow.
And so his family had no idea of the effect that he had had on us every Sunday morning when he sang.
Did you wind up talking to Tommy himself?
Absolutely. Tommy called on the phone and a couple of days later. And my wife said, who's this? He says, this is Tommy Bonner. My wife said, oh, my God. Tommy said, yeah, I was gobsmacked, he says, to hear that somebody wrote a song about me 40 years ago. He said, I had no idea.
that's just a beautiful story. Oh. So tell me about the Artain Boys Band, because that was such a huge part of your life. It's really kind of what drew you into music, where you learned your music, and it was famous, wasn't it?
It was famous. We would play at all the Super Bowl-type finals of the Irish football and hurling, the Irish sports associations.
What did you play?
And I played trombone. So the Irritating Boys Band was like 50 or 60 lads, maybe five trombones, five trumpets, five saxophones, maybe 20 clarinets, 10 drummers, and a couple of tubas. And they made the most awful noise you've ever heard. It was a wonderful noise. We thought the most important thing was to play loud.
I'm curious, do you think that the music you learned there and how you learned music has affected your approach to music later in your life?
Well, an amazing thing happened to me. I learned how to sing do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. And we learned songs in do, re, mi. This is even before I joined a band, you know. So I could sing stuff like, you know, so, do, re, do, mi, fa, sol, la, sol, mi, do, re, mi, do, sol, la, ti, la, la. So I learned how to do the do, re, mi, which we call tonic solfa. And that affected the way that I related to music, because when I hear something, even then, back then when I was 10, 9 or 10, I'd hear a piece of music and I'd learn how to turn it into tonic solfa. So Danny Boy would be ti do re mi la so mi re do la. And so music became very easy for me because of that. It was like a secret key. And so music became my whole life, really. And melody, the beauty about music is that it really impacts your soul. And I have a song about that if I could sing it.
Yes, I was going to ask if there's one more you could leave us with.
Okay. So this song is, I got thrown out of the band for fighting. And once you got thrown out of the band, you were never allowed back in. But I had a Christian brother who was in charge of the kitchen, a fellow called Brother O'Driscoll, who took a liking to me and became aware that music really was what I should be doing. And in a very rare for him and rare for most of the brothers, he compassionately got me back into the band. And that really, I think, saved my life. So I'm going to sing a little bit about that and about how music impacted me. I was always a little downhearted. Tonight I am worse and I feel justified. I've just been thrown out of the band for a fight with young Andy McBride. O'Driscoll said, "Why are you crying?" In charge of the kitchen, he's a bad-tempered man. I told him a life without music for me is a life without a friend. And I've lost one good chance, and I'll not get another. I'll never play those heartbreaking melodies again. He said, "Work hard, son, you'll be grand. Come on, lad, that stuff's all pretend. Strong men don't need music for a friend." So I'm working hard in the kitchen, and the whole world's asleep as I cross the ballpark. I make the sign of the cross as I pass by the church in the dark. I stop and gaze at the starlight. My breath rises up like a bird from a cage. Suddenly all of the stars in the sky come alive in a blaze. And I'm lost in a trance, and it's then that I hear them singing to me heartbreaking melodies above. Down from the stars, out of this world, till now that secret has remained. But I knew back then that I had music
for a friend. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm peeling spuds in the kitchen, and I'm singing away at some song that I've heard. When O'Driscoll, he creeps up behind me, he's listening, not saying a word. When I turn around, he is frowning, but surprisingly kind for a bad-tempered man. He said, let me speak to O'Connor, the brother in charge of the band. He might just let you back in, 'cause that's where you belong, son. Go back and play your heartbreaking melodies all day. You're daft as eggs, but that's okay. That kind of madness does no harm. And I had to agree with him, 'cause now I know that God gives these melodies to us. It's almost like he dresses up, puts on a suit, we'll understand. So we can have music for a friend. God gives these melodies to us.
Danny, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Real pleasure, Anne.
It's a pleasure. Danny Ellis is an Irish musician and writer, and we've been talking about his CD, 800 Voices, My Life in an Irish Orphanage. He's just published a memoir called The Boy at the Gate. For more information, check our Facebook page, 45 North on WPR. And if you want to hear the show again or share it with a friend, our website is wpr.org/45North. You're listening to the Ideas Network on Wisconsin Public Radio.